is Jason Bell from the NFL Show, and you are listening to the Franchise Tag Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Franchise Tag Podcast with me, your host, Freddie Hall. I hope you're doing all okay. Another great weekend of divisional NFL football. We get one step closer to the Super Bowl in Tampa. Exciting times ahead. But while you're waiting for the AFC Championship and the NFC Championship this weekend, you can listen to the Franchise Tag Podcast for the old fan, the new fan and the UK fan. Follow us on social media, on Facebook and Instagram with the Franchise Tag Podcast and on Twitter with the handle Franchise Tag UK. If you want to get in contact with us, DM us on there or email us at thefranchisetagpod@gmail.com. You can find our podcast on iTunes Podcast where you can leave a rating and a review, and we are on Spotify as well. But if you don't have any platforms, don't worry. You can go onto our website, www.thefranchisetag.co.uk. We are going to be covering all stuff about the divisional games last weekend. Well, only a couple of days ago. And then also with our eye looking towards the AFC and NFC Championship games. I've got Andrew, our fantasy man for the Franchise Tag Podcast, back on with us today. Did you have a good time over the weekend, Andrew, watching all the games?
Yeah, another great weekend. I was very, very tired on Monday morning, staying up for all those games, but loved it.
We've also got another person joining us today. We have Carl Brooks from the 2 Feet Inbounds podcast that is on YouTube. He's joining us today. Carl, again, did you have a good weekend of divisional football?
Yes, it was very entertaining. Put it this way, I had half my Browns cap on. Hopefully they beat the Chiefs. Unfortunately, it was never to avail.
They came very close at points, though. But we'll be chatting all about that in a moment. So, yeah, divisional round all been and done now. Very exciting weekend it was. And we are on the way to the conference championships. We had the Green Bay Packers beating the LA Rams 32-18. We had the Buffalo Bills beating the Baltimore Ravens 17-3. The Kansas City Chiefs beating the Cleveland Browns 22-17, like Carl mentioned there. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers putting away the New Orleans Saints 13-20, which gives us an AFC Championship game of the Bills going to the Chiefs. That's going to be on at 8:05 on Sunday. And then the Bucs at the Packers, which is going to be at 20-12 on Sunday. A little bit of a late one there, but I'm sure you'll be all very, very keen to stay up and watch it. So we're going to be talking about the matchups in the divisional weekend of what happened in the games, and we're looking at the championship games as well and how they're going to fare, and also about what these teams need to do to effectively beat each other to get to the Super Bowl. So we're going to start with the Packers beating the Rams 32-18. The Rams really looked like they were going to give a good fight. But when Green Bay get going, Carl, they just can beat anyone on their day, can't they?
Here's the thing with Green Bay. They've really only got one really good elite wide out, and that is obviously Davante Adams. His other receivers, though, are still very much unknowns. You know, Adam Lazard, Montez Valdez Scantling, and even the new tight end that came onto the scene midway through the season. If anybody picked him up in fantasy, you really did pick up a gem there, and that's Robert Tonyan. But Aaron Rodgers, at this moment in time, he is just playing. I think there's no question to say about it. I think he is playing as an MVP right now. I think there can be no questions about it. What I was more disappointed with the Rams, I wasn't surprised by what I saw from Jared Goff, to be honest with you. He's a starting quarterback, but he's not the sort of person that's going to wow you in any way, shape or form. I just think overall, the Rams, they tried to run the ball with Cam Akers. He rushed for 90 yards on 18 carries. It's 5 yards a carry. But in the passing game, it just wasn't there. And the Packers, give credit to the Packers pass rush. They really got after Jared Goff in this game.
Yeah, they got 4 sacks and they only allowed for a total of 244 yards, which is pretty decent. I mean, you're right, Jared Goff is a little limited. I think he did really miss Cooper Kupp in this game as well. Obviously, his predominant wideout that he goes to. And Cam Akers, though, had an incredible week last week and only has just burst onto the scene later on in the season. Couldn't really get going. And I think he's not limited. I think he's still got a very, very bright future ahead of him with the Rams. But it wasn't good enough on the day. Andrew, we said, you know, what did the Rams needed to do? They needed to have a good run game. They only rushed for 96 yards in total on the day. They needed to stop Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers' connection. He had 9 receptions, 66 yards and a touchdown. They needed to pressure Aaron Rodgers. They got 0 sacks. He also got 0 interceptions as well. We also said they really needed to protect Goff. And like we said a second ago, Goff got sacked 4 times. Was it this just? Is this just now a very elite Packers team, or was there elements in the game where the Rams really could have controlled that game a lot better? Obviously, a lot of the game was without Aaron Donald, admittedly, on the sideline with his injury, rib injury and cartilage injury that he's been suffering with over the last week. Give me a summary of how you felt about this game, Andrew, Rams being quite close to your heart as your second team, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Rams stayed in the game quite well, which I was quite surprised at with the way it was going. As Carl said, they got that much pressure on Goff. I mean, he only missed 6 passes, but to only get 174 yards, he's got a lot of pressure on him. He couldn't make any deep threats. They just couldn't move the ball far enough down the field to keep the clock going and keep the time on their side to generate some more points. Whereas the Packers, on the other hand, you know, they managed to move the ball on third down. They managed to keep that that Rams defense on the pitch. And without Donald, it looked quite tired and got no pressure on him. And they just managed to find another gear when they needed to.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Aaron Rodgers now has tied Joe Montana with 12, tied at second with the most playoff games with 250-plus passing yards and 2-plus passing touchdowns. And Green Bay have now tied Steelers with the second most postseason wins. We'll talk more about the Packers in the NFC Championship in a moment, but let's move on to the Buffalo Bills at the Baltimore Ravens. A game that felt worryingly, Carl, that it was going to be a bit of a snooze fest when it was 3-3 at halftime. And then it exploded onto the scene in the second half. And that's when it was a real battle of the offences compared to what seemed like a more of the battle of the defences in the first half, right?
Yes, absolutely. They were just cancelling each other out. What I was more impressed with, though, during this game, how the Bills managed to contain Lamar Jackson. This Bills defence is very, very underrated. They're coming up to the ball at exactly the right time now. They managed to get 2 sacks on Lamar Jackson, and their third down efficiency, it was only 4-13, so not very good. This was basically a case of which quarterback is going to make the biggest mistake. And unfortunately, on this occasion, Lamar Jackson not only threw a pick 6, but it went back the other way for 101 yards returning touchdown. Lamar's going to wish he'd have that throw back now. But I've got a question for Andrew, if that's okay. How much further do you think Lamar Jackson can go under offensive coordinator Greg Roman? Because in the last 3 years, Greg Roman has been offensive coordinator for the Ravens. He's got the number one rushing attack for the last 3 years of the Baltimore Ravens. But his passing game has not gone above over 20th in the NFL. I think we're now at a stage where Lamar now has to take his passing game to the second and the third dimensions, because we saw this with Michael Vick. You know, he was okay with his arm, but his legs, he was brilliant. And the throws he managed to get to was the NFC Championship.
I don't necessarily think they need to move away from what they've been doing. I don't necessarily think that they need to progress Lamar Jackson into a thrower. I think if they can come up with a playbook year in, year out that means they can be the number one dominant running team and get that to work for them, I think that's more than acceptable, and that's an identity for them. I don't think they need to try and push. I mean, we've seen it when they try and push him to throw the ball more often and try to move him into that style quarterback, it doesn't seem to work for him. So I think they've got a good enough offensive coordinator to come up with a new playbook for them, similar to they had in Lamar's first year. Maybe get some more tight ends back and play that 3 tight end set and work off of that. Maybe use that as the passing game like they did before. I think they could be the stable team to make that their identity.
It is strange. We talk about identity. We've just used that word a few times there. How the identity has changed from last year to this year. Andrew's right with that three set tight end, you know, dynamic. It worked so well with Lamar in the throwing game. But you are right, Carl. Have we hit a ceiling now with how much Lamar can progress in his throwing? Or I do think in his 3 years he has been in the league, every year it has got better and has progressed. But do you think under Greg Roman then that this is going to hit a ceiling and that, yeah, it's all well and good, you can run the ball down their throats, but they're going to need to get that passing game in the higher echelons if Lamar is going to really push this team to the Super Bowl one day?
Well, when you look at a receiving core in most teams, what do you look for? You look for their number one target and you look for the guy to take the top off the defense. Marquise Brown is really their only receiver. It's basically their one to take the top off and is also his number one receiver. If you exclude Mark Andrews, he's the tight end, but he's the one who is always in the flat all the time. I personally think the Ravens, in this free agency, they need to go out and go and get a number one wide receiver, whether that's someone like Allen Robinson or Kenny Golladay, someone just to give Marquise Brown that little bit more space, a little bit more time for separation so he can get open on the deep ball. And I think that will help Lamar Jackson down the stretch.
I totally, totally agree with you there. And this is actually exactly what me and Andrew talked about last season with what the Buffalo Bills need to go and get a number one top wide receiver. And again, in this game for the Bills, it was the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs combo that was awesome. Again, Allen was 23, 37, 206 yards and a touchdown. Diggs, 8 receptions, 106 yards and a touchdown. How much better has this Bills got now they do have that number one wide receiver? And you talk about the progression of Lamar Jackson. The progression of Josh Allen is really a massive story here in the NFL this year, surely.
Well, it's a bitter pill for me to swallow because I'm a Patriots fan here.
even more bitter pill to be swallowed if Brady gets the Super Bowl and it's against the Bills as well.
Don't go down that road, please. but no, if I see a team in our division that's actually going leaps and bounds and are actually performing really well, I'll give them respect for it. The Buffalo Bills have been simply outstanding. And you are right, they got Stephon Diggs. I think, what was it, they gave up a first, I think it was like a first to sixth for the seventh round pick. They basically traded the whole house to go and get Stephon Diggs. And look where they are now. They're in the AFC Championship game for, I can't remember what it is. It's like the first time in decades now, I believe.
I'm not sure how long it has been, but yeah, you're right. It is completely changed the dynamic, really, of Buffalo. And it was, me and Andrew thought it was just the piece that they needed to push them all the way there. And Andrew, we said that the Bills needed to be better on defense. They were pretty good in this game. They got 4 sacks. They obviously got the interception for the touchdown. We said they did need to be better in the run game. They only got 32 yards in the rushing game. Is that, we'll talk about maybe if that matters more going forward, but how impressed are you by this Bills team?
Yeah, it's a great team. It's a very easy team to enjoy to watch. I know a lot of our friends have all said they've really enjoyed watching the Bills this year. And it's just from the way they play the football. I think you're right in saying Josh Allen's progression. He was more of a scrambling running back that threw the ball in, and we were saying, was he good enough at throwing it? And now he's got in the two games in the playoffs, team on his back throwing the ball to win the games with their no run game whatsoever. So yeah, it's really nice to see. It's really nice to see that they have got two sides to them, but there definitely needs to be more in that run game for them to progress. You can't keep relying on Josh Allen just to throw the ball all the time.
Okay, let's move on to the Kansas City Chiefs beating the Cleveland Browns 22-17. I mean, when Kansas City get going early, they're just so hard to beat. I mean, at halftime, it was 19-3, Carl. This Kansas City Chiefs team can just be a joy to watch, can't it?
They can be. But for me, it's like grinding my teeth with watching this team play. Because if they do win the Super Bowl again, they've won it back-to-back. And that means the dynasty's on the NFL's hands again. Pretty much no one wants that. The Kansas City, yeah, that first half they were just excellent. They held Cleveland down, and Mahomes was just being Mahomes. You know what he's capable of. Well, he only threw for one touchdown, but that was obviously to Travis Kelce, who ended up breaking Denzel Ward's ankles on the play. but the rushing game, I was very, very impressed with Kansas City. I think it's Darrell Williams. He rushed for 78 yards. That's really surprising. And also this Chiefs defense, The stats may not look like that they're a good defense, but the one thing they are very, very good at is making plays and making takeaways. They are so, so good at that. And Steve Spagnuolo has done an amazing job with that Chiefs defense. With regard to the Browns, I think there was a lot of high optimism, mostly from Browns fans, but I think everyone from the NFL, because they were all expected, this is the fairy tale story that the NFL have been waiting for quite some time. And it had to be the Cleveland Browns of all teams. They had the opportunity in the second half, obviously, when Mahomes went out with a concussion. Unfortunately, they just didn't take their chances. And I think we will speak to more about the fumbling out the back of the end zone, because that's a rule which has really, really made everyone very, very angry, because it's a rule which, to me, there are a lot of rules in the NFL which make sense and some which are a little bit foolish, but this one has got to be one of the most stupidest, that's in my own opinion.
Sticking with you, Carl, obviously, I completely agree. This fumbling out into the end zone is just an absolutely crazy rule, and I just don't understand what the idea behind it is. But obviously, on that tackle was a bit of a helmet-to-helmet hit by Daniel Sorensen, and that was never really talked about at the time, and I don't think even the refs really explored it. Obviously, with the hindsight of, you know, with the media, with videoing, with how up to date all the NFL is with replays, etc. What was your take on that tackle? Because that was a very pivotal moment for the Browns. If they got a touchdown there, it could very much have been a very different story against this Kansas City Chiefs team.
When I first saw that and I saw the replay of it, I was cussing so badly that it wouldn't be able to be broadcasted. But I've watched the condensed 40 again. I've watched it over so many times. I can understand why a lot of people say that it's disgusting because it's a helmet to helmet. But at that point, what is Sorensen supposed to do? Unless he's just going to allow Higgins just to dive it in for the touchdown. You know, he's trying to charge him with his shoulder pads, because that's what every defensive player does. The fact that his helmet contacts with the other helmet, however, it's a bit strange. That's why there was no booth review for this. It's a catch 22 situation.
Yeah.
It's either you get off scot free, or it's a personal foul, lowering the helmet to initiate contact, and you're ejected from the game. It's two different sides of a coin.
Yeah. I don't think the intention was like dirty. Like, I don't think it's bad. It's same with these analysts when they're talking about it, and I like to try and think about it from playing, you know, if you were playing. It's like with roughing the passer against the quarterback sometimes. There is so much momentum. The games are so high stakes. You're going at such a fast pace. These things do happen. And it isn't intentional a lot of the time. You'd like to hope anyway. And this certainly wasn't intentional. But though, yeah, you're right. It is helmet to helmet, and it's deemed an illegal play. But at the same time, you're right. He's trying to stop the touchdown. It's from where he's running. You're not going to be able to get any part of your body to be able to stop him. At the end of the day, these games are high stakes, and the game is played so fast, and it's such a momentum that these things happen. So I can see what you mean, where it is a catch 22, where, yeah, the helmet to helmet is an illegal play, but what he's trying to stop the touchdown. If stopping that touchdown is detrimental to win this game, which it was from the scoreline, as we have now seen. So yeah, it is so hard. Obviously, it was talked about a lot on after the game, really, I suppose, and on social media. Andrew, from your standpoint, what did you think of the whole scenario with that, and also with this rule as well?
Well, it is helmet to helmet, and if he does lower his head, and if that's the rule, regardless of it is hard to go out of it, and it is hard. If the rule is you lower your helmet to make a tackle, that's the foul, then it is the foul. And I think we saw in the Saints-Buccaneers game very early on a very similar challenge, not in the same position of the field, but a very, very similar challenge. But he didn't lower the helmet. He used his shoulder. And that was given as a foul. and the flag was thrown for that. And they replayed it a couple of times and said, oh, you know, he did. It wasn't helmet. That was shoulder. And that was given. So they need to really, really clear up of get these little bits correct. And I think they do need to booth review and have a look at some of these in detail a bit more to get the decisions right, because it's not clear across the board.
And also your opinion on this rule of, you know, you fumble it into the end zone and it being in a touchback. What's all, you know, that seems crazy to every NFL fan. There has to be some logic behind that, surely.
Yeah, there's got to be some logic. I was meaning to, prior to talking to all of you lot on the group and coming on here, to actually find out the reasoning, because there's got to be a reasoning behind it, whether it's to do with stopping people trying to roll the ball in for touchdowns or whatever. But I just can't understand why they don't just bring it back to where it was fumbled, because and just don't advance it. Because, yeah, it doesn't really make too much sense.
That's exactly the same point I was going to make as well. Yeah, because if that was just a fumble in the end zone, then it should really go back to where the spot of the fumble was. So if that was at the 1 yard line, then that's basically a 1 yard rushing touchdown incoming from Nick Chubb, and then we could be talking about a hell of a different story. But deviate away from the actual helmet to helmet call. There's a certain reason why Bill Belichick always tells his receivers never reach for the ball over the goal line. Because of that sort of thing that can happen. There's only really two scenarios which you should ever do such a thing. And that's one, if you are 100% confident you can actually get to the line, then fine. And the second one, if the clock has struck zero on the fourth quarter. If that's the final play of the game, then you have to do everything that's necessary to do it. So you have to try and reach it to get the ball over the line. But Higgins is going to learn this. He's a rookie. He will learn from this. I think from now on, if he goes by the goal line, he sees someone incoming about to tackle him, he's gonna protect that ball at all times.
Yeah, I think you're right. That is also the other thing that people we spoke about, me and Andrew and our friends in a group at the time, that why didn't he just go out of bounds? He could have got his team 6-7 points there on the board. But like you said, yeah, this is a learning curve for Higgins. This is a learning curve for the whole Browns team, I think, in this game, because I don't think the Browns. This isn't a one-off, I don't think, for the playoffs for the Browns. I think they're going to be a team that is going to be pushing there a lot in the future. I think that Kevin Stefanski has really turned this team around. It's me and Andrew both were both said he's our head coach of the year, Carl, because of how well he's turned around this Browns team.
I think like you make that 3 for 3. Stefanski's done an amazing job, considering the fact we're in the middle of a pandemic. There was no OTAs, no mini camp, no preseason. He's come in basically blind into this team and managed to get them to 11-5. I mean, it's simply outstanding. But with this game against the Chiefs, however, his game management in this wasn't very good. There was a challenge he made where Tyreek Hill caught the ball, which he did, and that lost them a timeout. And then the other one was, I think it was DeMarcus Robinson's catch, which did actually bounce off the ground when he caught it, and he didn't even challenge for it. It's game management for Stefanski. He will learn from that. But those sorts of, we always talk about the NFL, games are won by very, very fine margins, and it's those fine margins that could cost you
the game. I have become a broken record on Twitter of a play happening and going, that's the sort of play that wins or loses you a playoff game. It's such fine margins. These tight window catches, these decisions that you make with in such small time frames and with such small windows are things that will win you playoff games. I mean, we go back to the Ravens game, for example, when Huntley, he throws a lovely deep ball over to Marquise Brown but misses him by about a yard. Brown gets that. He rushes it, goes in for a touchdown. You've got game on there against the Bills. Same here with if Rashard Higgins had gone out of bounds and then they got the 1 yard, they got a touchdown by Nick Chubb, we could probably imagine, or Kareem Hunt, for example. It is all these tiny things in these playoff games matter so much more and are so much more magnified because these games just mean so much more. And it's really fun seeing that, I think.
I totally agree with that.
Let's move on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints game. So this was a very slow starting game as well in the first quarter, but it very much came alive in the second quarter. And, you know, Saints did have to do a bit of a big trick play to get the touchdown. And it was a really fascinating game. The last time we're probably ever going to see Tom Brady coming up against Drew Brees, as we all know that Drew Brees is probably going to be retiring now. It's not actually been completely officially confirmed. He's, the words haven't come out of his mouth. They've come out of a lot of other people's mouths. But what a career Drew Brees has had. However, this is probably one game that he will very much want to forget. I mean, throwing three interceptions against this Bucs team, you're a lamb to the slaughter, aren't you here, Carl?
Yeah, it's sad that Drew Brees has had to go out like this. But here's the thing. Over the course of the season, did we all think that Drew Brees was really going to go to the Super Bowl with the way he was playing? If the quarterback can't push the ball down the field, you're not going to go very far. It was basic when Michael Thomas went out, it was basically a running play by Alvin Kamara or a check down to Alvin Kamara. That was basically it, maybe one or two throws to Emmanuel Sanders and Jared Cook. But during that game, it was very close. Obviously, it was 20 points each going into the fourth quarter. So this is just be a case of who's going to make the first mistake. And unfortunately, Drew Brees made multiple mistakes in that fourth quarter, and just let the game pass by. Neither quarterback had their best game, in all fairness. Brady threw 18 of 33. Only had, I think it was 199 yards and two touchdowns. So it wasn't the best game for him. And then Drew Brees, 19 of 34 for 134 yards. So the best quarterback in that game on Sunday was, there's no disrespect to Brees or Brady, but it was Jameis Winston.
he made a pretty darn good play.
And just scrolling through now, and the receiving yards, I mean, yeah, Brees threw, Traquan Smith got two touchdowns, Sanders 48 yards, Jarrett at 28 yards. Michael Thomas, his number one go-to guy, no receiving yards, no catches. He had more receiving yards. He had more receiving yards than you, me, and Andrew put together. That's embarrassing.
With a game like this, Andrew, the meaning and how important it was, following on from what Carl just said there, big games, you need big players to play. Alvin Kamara had a decent game, 18 carries, 85 yards, but no touchdowns. Michael Thomas didn't do much. They had to rely on a trick play to get their first touchdown. Was this Saints team just not really on it that game, or is it more that they drag themselves to that game? I think we've said that they have made stuff look easy a lot in this season, which I think they have, but that has been the style that they play. Very short throwing yards, Alvin Kamara being very good. What did you think went wrong for the Saints in this game?
It's a bit of a difficult one because like you said, they have made football look easy up to this point, but I think the loss to Taysom Hill in that team is quite big for them. When Anu was out, I wanted to see what Drew Brees could do. And it just loses a little X factor for them. And it loses a little bit of what are they going to do? Where's he going to line up? He's big in the receiving game for Brees. He's big in filling in at the quarterback. And I think that's a massive loss to this team when he's not in there as a player. And I think you could see that with the stats of all the other players. I think he does make that much of a difference on that team. And the Buccaneers just came out and kind of just moved the ball nicely. Nothing too flashy. Got the job done. I thought Leonard Fournette had a really, really good game. Really pleased for him. He really needed that. They distributed the ball out between a lot of people. So it's always going to be difficult for that real strong Saints defense to sort of mark everyone when they're distributing it out quite nicely. And that was just like the factor that's swaying this in the side of the Buccaneers is the Saints just didn't look like they had an X factor, which they, I think they missed.
Yeah, Carl, thinking about that with Brady, I mean, only one player had 50 plus yards, and actually that was Cameron Brate with 50 yards, and he targeted 9 different players. We focused a lot with the Bucs on Mike Evans, on Chris Godwin, on AB, and players like that. You know, like Andrew said there, Fournette had a good game, 17 carries, 63 yards. Ronald Jones, who's come back from an injury, he was more of a splash player in this game. He had 13 carries for 62 yards. He worked really well as a bit of a splash play sort of player rather than every down back in this game. We've said sort of look at all of the offensive weapons for the Buccaneers. However, it was other players in this offensive unit that were getting the catches and getting the yards. Do you think the Bucs now, offensively wise, is a lot more complete than maybe it was in the first couple of weeks where there was a lot of heavy targeting of Evans and of Godwin?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Antonio Brown was the main one when he came in. Everyone thought that he was just going to be a real head case in the locker room, or is that because we don't know what the situation is, what he is off the field. But it looks like he's got his head right. He's good to go, and he's made some good plays throughout the season. We don't know what the situation is regarding of the injury he sustained in that game. But yes, I mean Scott. I mean, as you saw, it's been spread out everywhere. I mean, Cameron Bray. You would have think he'd throw to his go-to guy, Rob Gronkowski. But Cameron Bray, over the last three games, has just got better and better. And he's a problem to deal with if you're Green Bay, because you think you're going to just try and defend Gronkowski. This Cameron Bray guy is no scrub. He can play.
Do you think it's very Patriots of Brady that he's had his targets all year and then he's going to the offseason and suddenly we're seeing players that we've not really heard of much in the season suddenly become very good? I think about Brady and Patriots playoff games with people like Rex Burkhead, James White, several receivers, you know, players that maybe didn't do much in the season. But then when it comes to the playoffs, they seem to be coming out of the woodwork almost and playing incredibly.
I think one of the receivers in prime question who didn't do much in the regular season but was excellent for us in the playoffs was Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
We nicknamed him playoff Amendola for a reason, because when Edelman and Gronk were just not getting anything, he was basically Brady's safety valve.
And you see similarities with this Bucs team in a way?
Yes. Yes, I do. I mean, Godwin, he needs to get his catching way sorted, because there was a couple of balls there which he should have had and he dropped. Scotty Miller, I think Scotty Miller is a good slot receiver, and there's a rookie as well. I think it's Johnson, his name is. He only had one catch, but my good God, that's something you would see from that catch was something you see from DeAndre Hopkins or Julio Jones. It was an outstanding catch, but my game has only had one catch for 3 yards, but it led up to the touchdown. I mean, Marshawn Lattimore had him a lockdown pretty much all game long, up until that touchdown.
Yeah, it was a very good matchup then. We've had some really great wide receiver cornerback matchups over the weekend, but you're right. He just finds these players, doesn't he? Scotty Miller. I think his name's Tyler Johnson, but I may be wrong. Yeah. It was a fantastic catch there as well. He's just Tom Brady, isn't he? That's why he's the greatest of all time. He just finds these plays and digs deep and gets these plays done. Andrew, not the send-off that Drew Brees wanted. It was very emotional seeing him look back at the stadium as he left. You sent me the video earlier, though I'd seen it already, of Brady and him chatting after the game. Brady throwing a touchdown to his kids into the end zone and stuff. I mean, the game's going to really miss this guy, right?
Yeah, massively. He's such a big personality, not only for the Saints, but for the NFL, I think. I think he gets people into the game. He's a good community person. He's done a lot for New Orleans and for Louisiana. And a lot of people look up to him and aspire to, like, you know, have a career like him. He was previously at the Chargers and moved to the Saints. And it gives people a chance to think, you know what, if I don't make it first time round, I could definitely go somewhere else and make myself a franchise quarterback for the future and have a long career. So I think he's going to be greatly missed, but what he's achieved is always going to be good for the youngsters to look up to and aspire to be.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. It's going to be a heck of a loss for the New Orleans Saints. It's going to be very interesting in the offseason where they go QB-wise. Let's talk about then the AFC Championship and the NFC Championship happening this Sunday. We've got the Buffalo Bills going to Arrowhead Stadium at the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to ask Carl about what you think the Chiefs need to do to beat the Bills. And then, Andrew, you can talk about the Bills, how they're going to beat the Chiefs. So, firstly, Carl, what have the Kansas City Chiefs have got to do at home to beat the Buffalo Bills? Obviously, we do not know what's going to happen with Patrick Mahomes yet. if he passes, I believe you meant it's 7 days. But if after day five, four and five, you're looking good, you're pretty much good to go from the looks of it. But even with Holmes or without Holmes, how is this Kansas City Chiefs going to beat the Buffalo Bills?
Well, I think to beat Buffalo, they are going to need Mahomes on the field. I Chan Henney, yes, okay, fair enough. He got you the win against the the Browns. But that was due to a few plays. Yes, he threw a nice deep ball to Tyreek Hill and that. But apart from that 4-1 that Andy Reid, how the hell did he pull that off sort of maneuver? They do need Patrick Mahomes in this game. Josh Allen is playing absolutely outstanding at this moment in time. What I would say with Kansas City, they need to double cover Stephon Diggs at all times. It's not like the Bills have a plethora of weapons around them that are going to cause you pain. For the Chiefs example, you've got Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, DeMarcus Robinson, McCole Hardman, Le'Veon Bell, Darrell Williams. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire might be back for this game, but I'm not 100% sure on that. You look at the Bills receiving core. They've got Stephon Diggs and they've got John Brown and Gabriel Davis, and they do have a tight end in Dawson Knox. But Dawson
Cole
Knox
Beasley as well. Cole Beasley.
Cole Beasley, who's playing really good right now. I could just see this being a game where defense is going to play a non-factor in this. It's just going to be a fireworks display. We know what Josh Allen is capable of. We certainly know what Patrick Mahomes is capable of. All I will say with regarding of Patrick Mahomes is this, right? If he is cleared by the doctors to play, then great. We get him versus Allen. Everyone's happy about it. The last thing I want to see is, because it's in the hands of the doctors, it's not in the hands of Mahomes or Andy Reid or the NFL or Roger Goodell. It's in the hands of the doctors and the specialists. If they deem him that he is not good for Sunday, I do not want to see any of the above tell the doctors, no, he is going to play. Because then you are putting that guy at risk. We've so many injuries that have happened in the NFL. We look at torn ACLs and this, that, and the other. But the concussion has been very, very well documented in the NFL. It's not just a serious injury. It could hurt you for the rest of your life.
It was documented that he was very insistent about trying to get back on the field, and they said no, you can't really. So yeah, you're right. I think though this game in the eyes of the sports fan and you guys of the franchise is a very big important game, they are going to have to make sure they're putting Patrick Mahomes' health first, right?
You have to put health and safety first. With this sort of injury, you just have to, because the Chiefs have given Mahomes this mahoosive contract, which I don't think no one is going to surpass anytime soon. And if Mahomes goes out against Buffalo, he takes another sort of hit like that, and it's more severe than what the first contact was, that could be problems for Kansas City down the road. And no one wants to see that, especially Patrick Mahomes, who's just a transcendent talent.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Live for another day with that sort of thing. Andrew, the Buffalo Bills, their defense looked better last week, and they were good, but I still think they could get to another level there. What are you thinking this Buffalo Bills team needs to do to go into Arrowhead, a stadium that will have fans in, a notoriously very loud stadium? What do you think they need to do?
I mean, they've got some very talented players on the offense and the defense, and they need to make sure that they don't let the stage and the where they are get to them. They need to make sure that they come into this game very mature. It's the first time they've been there, and they need to just, at the start of the game, they need to do the basics well. Like I said, they've got talented players on both sides of the offense and defense. Do the basics well. Don't try and come out all guns blazing. I think you just need to make sure you're wrapping players up and taking them to the ground. Don't always try and go for that big play. Don't try and hit the ball out. Don't try and force anything from Josh Allen. They need to slowly work their way into the game, keep it close. Because as we've seen, the Chiefs don't tend to pull away from teams this season. They tend to just keep themselves in it and then, you know, just hold out for the win. So I think if the Bills, on the other, on the flip side, the Bills, they've come alive in the second half of games, and they've looked, and fourth quarter, they've looked dangerous and they've pushed to win games. So I think if they do the basics right in the first half, feel the how the game's going, feel, like get used to being in a championship game, and then go at them in the second half. And I think if they do that in the second half, I think we could see the Bills going through here.
Okie dokes. Carl, let's say Patrick Mahomes is healthy for this game. Who have you got winning this one?
Bills winning 33-30.
33-30. That's a very, very close scoreline. Andrew, again, same question to you.
Yeah, I think I've got the Bills edging them out. I don't think it's going to be as high scoring maybe as that, but it's definitely a Bills win. I think Bills will win by over 7 points.
I'm going to go for the Bills as well. I'm going to go for more of a... I'm going to go 27-23, around that sort of line, I reckon. I definitely like the Bills for it. Okay, we'll move on to the NFC Championship. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers going to Lambeau Field at the Green Bay Packers. Carl, I'll ask you about the Packers. Andrew, I'll ask you about the Bucs. So Green Bay, maybe the MVP at quarterback there of the year. For me, he is the MVP. They've got to keep up that strong run game, and Aaron Rodgers has just got to keep playing like he has been playing all year. Carl, Packers, what are they going to do to win this game against the Buccaneers?
Get pressure on Brady. Once you get pressure on Brady, he's tap dancing in the spot, that's when you know you've got him. But we know how quickly he can get that ball out within two to two and a half seconds. So they've got to just keep pressure Brady all the time. It's going to be difficult in this game. I don't think Brady is going to have... I don't think he's going to have the monster game for this. So with Green Bay's defense, they have to try and stop the running game. They have got to stop Jones and they've got to stop Fournette. If they can do that and put the ball in Brady's... Well, you put the ball in Brady's hands, Brady's has to be clutch. And we know that he is capable of being clutch. They just got to make turnovers in this game. The Packers defense has to. Regardless of the offense, Aaron Rodgers, we know he can scramble out of the pocket and can make those awesome, awesome throws. But Devontae Adams is going to be a targeted man. The likes of Montez Arda Scantling, St. Brown, and Robert Tonyan, they are all going to have games in which to help Aaron Rodgers out, because this Bucs defense will come running after him.
And Andrew, same thing for you, the Buccaneers. I think Carl's very right about they need to get to Brady, protect Aaron. I think that's the exact same vice versa for the Buccaneers, really. What do you think Tampa Bay needs to do to go and get a win at Lambeau?
I think Bruce Arians just needs to tell Tom Brady, do what Tom Brady does best. They've got a lot of momentum going to this game. The last sort of five, six games that they've played coming into this, they just look like a different team. He's got a lot of weapons. He knows how to use all of them, from the rookies to the most experienced. They've come up against a very, very strong Saints defense, a very, very strong Washington defense, and they've overcome them. So there's no reason why they can't play against this Packers defense, which I don't think is as strong as the other two we've mentioned. Yeah, they definitely need another big game out of Fournette and Jones. And then Brady will just do what he needs to do best. There's a lot of experience on that Buccaneers team on both sides of the ball. They know they've been there. They've been at this level of the game. They've been to championships. They know what's expected of them. So I just think that will see them through.
Okay, Carl, what do you reckon here then? What you got winning this game? Scoreline? Who do you reckon's coming away?
I think that the Buccaneers are going to make history. I think the Buccaneers win 28-25.
Oof, that's a very close scoreline there as well. Andrew, what are you reckoning?
Yeah, I'm going with the Buccaneers as well. I just got a feeling about this Buccaneers team. I said it to you maybe sort of five, 6 weeks ago. when they started to get hot, I was like, they're Super Bowl bound. As soon as Brady gets hot, you know, he knows how to do it. I think it's going to be a bit of a high scoring game. I think both teams are going to get into the 30s.
Nice. So both into the 30s there. I'm going to stick with Packers. I would like personally the books to go through, because I really love the idea now. I fairly love the idea now with Tom in Tampa giving his middle finger up to Bill, saying, you know, this is what I can do still. Which I'm sure doesn't please you, Carl, too much, but it would be a fun sight to see after his trying to high five the referee over the weekend. It wouldn't be out of the realms that he would do that sort of thing anymore. But the Packers, I think, win this. I think they might maybe run away with it. I'm going to go 27-14.
I will.
Go on.
I will add this, though. When I spoke to a show that I go on Saturday afternoons at 2:30 p.m. on live on YouTube, the Shank Club NFL, I did turn around and say, whoever won this game has, I will probably say, if the Saints had beat the Bucks, I'd say the Packers would win it, because the Saints playing the Dome and Drew Brees in the cold, I don't trust him with. Brady, on the other hand, he spent 20 years in New England. He knows the conditions. He knows what cold weather is like. He will rally that team in that game, which is why I give the Bucs more of a chance to beat the Packers than I would the Saints to beat the Packers. That's why I've gone for the Buccaneers on this, because Brady knows how to do it in the cold.
Wow, Tom Brady in his 40s, still the X factor in the NFL as he is. Carl, I really appreciate you coming on, my friend. Where can we find all your podcasts and everything to do with you in NFL?
Well, I'm on Twitter. My name is @BritishPat28. That will be changed, though, in around about a month or so time to my actual YouTube channel. And the YouTube channel that I run is called 2 Feet in Bounds. It's basically a different NFL perspective from a UK fan. I just go through previews and predictions and reviews from all the games that have happened throughout the weeks. And I also did for this season our own fantasy league, because I've played in a fantasy league now for 3 years with some very, very close friends of mine. And we put it on the YouTube channel this season. It's been really, really good fun. Sadly, unfortunately, I lost in the championship round. This is what happens when you play in week 17 in a championship round in fantasy.
We've changed it also, as is week 16. Me and Andrew in a similar probably star league that you were in. Ask Andrew how he did in fantasy this year.
Did you win?
Well, I didn't finish bottom.
but was definitely the bottom feeder for probably 3 quarters of the year.
How many games did you lose before you got your first win?
Loads. I mean, I think it was about eight. I mean, I had some rotten luck. I mean, I think four of my first four round picks all were on IR by sort of week two. You know, I had Saquon Barkley, I had Cortland Sutton, and there's 14 players in our league, so there's nothing on the waivers.
Oh, Jesus. No, I think my best mate beat you to the punch there. He went 0-9. Oof. But yeah, he did finish there with 3-12, though, so...
Well, I just snuck in. I was, like, hovering around the bottom mid-table the whole year and then just snuck into the playoffs. And then beat the first game was against, I think, the top of the league, who was 13-2 or 13-3. I can't remember. Yeah. It was something like that. He'd won massively all season. And I beat him, and I was pretty pleased about that. But I got to the semis and crashed out. But what a crazy year fantasy football has been, with like all the injuries and the IR and COVID and everything like that. It's been definitely one of the most competitive fantasy years we've ever played.
It's been tiring for me, massively. Especially the fact when games get pushed to Tuesday and Wednesday. So you try and go to sleep because you've got work the next morning. But then you wake up at 2:30 in the morning, so you need to check your phone. Goes, oh no, how's this player getting on? I don't know.
Well, fantasy football is an addiction that we can all get behind, for sure. Again, Carl, I really appreciate you coming on, my man. Andrew, thank you again for coming on and helping me out here. I'll be chatting to you next week about the Super Bowl, I suppose, Andrew.
Yeah. Gutted we can't have a Super Bowl party.
Well, yeah, if you go to Morrison's now, as it's plus, they have £25, you can have your own little Super Bowl spread and you'll be all fine, which is pretty much looks the exact same spread for Andrew you put on every, your family puts on for us every year for the pies. Unfortunately, yeah, we won't all be able to watch it all together, but I'm sure we'll be FaceTiming, texting and etc. But from us, that's all we've got time for the Franchise Tag Podcast this week. Make sure you follow us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram with the Franchise Tag Podcast, and on Twitter with the handle Franchise Tag UK. You can find our podcast on iTunes Podcast and on Spotify as well. But if you don't have any platforms, you can go to our website, www.thefranchisetag.co.uk. Keep all safe, healthy and well. Keep looking after each other. Keep social distancing, washing your hands. We'll get all through this together and we can all look forward to the NFL once again together in the 2021 season when it comes up. But let's keep looking after each other and we'll get all through this. But until then, have a good weekend of NFC and AFC Championship, and we'll see you next week.